Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of July 19th, 2018. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, very well, very well, very well. So, Mariah, despite the heat this week and the intense storms that we got here a couple days ago, if you remember, things have been busy on Beacon Hill. As you may remember, from a climate hawk's perspective, the big drama on Beacon Hill has been related to a bill called the Clean Energy Future Bill proposed by Senator Mark Pacheco, whom we had the pleasure of talking to last week or last couple of weeks about the bill that he was managing through the Massachusetts Senate. And that bill was an excellent bill, had a lot of stuff for climate hawks to love. It passed unanimously in the Senate and then proceeded to the Massachusetts House of Representatives, which is the other body in our bicameral system of government bequeathed to us by John Quincy Adams in 1783 or something. Anyway, just so that you know. Anyway, the bill, the Clean Energy Future Bill, went from the Senate basically and had counterparts in the House that were being considered. So what we want to do today is to talk a little bit about the fate of those bills in the Massachusetts House. But I think as a precursor, Mariah, can you remind us of what was in the Clean Energy Future Bill that Senator Pacheco talked to us about? What was kind of the scope and why were our hearts singing so much when we talked to him?
I know, they really were. That was an exciting conversation we had with him last week. After talking to him, I just felt like, wow, okay, there's a lot of hope. Massachusetts is going to be a leader. We're going to do all of these great things. One of the key points that he highlighted was the independent investigation of the bill by the Applied Economics Clinic, which looked at four areas of the bill: the renewable portfolio standard, which we can talk about in a minute, the offshore wind proposal, battery storage, the increase in the battery storage capacity and goal, and lifting a net metering cap. So this independent organization, Applied Economics Clinic, looked at these parts of the bill and figured out that the Senate bill would create 1,800 new jobs, good long-term construction jobs, as well as other jobs, would create $263 million in economic growth per year from 2018 to 2030. So that's awesome. And almost 10,000 gigawatts of solar, of renewable energy, and a 600,000 metric ton greenhouse gas emissions reduction, with no increase in any bills paid by Massachusetts.
Seems like a good deal.
Yeah. I mean, this is a really great, when you put this forward, it was like, what, this is a win-win. Like, why wouldn't you do this? And, you know, of course it also puts us as a leader up against our competitors. And one of the key sort of pivot points, both in, I guess, in the discussions with the House and the Senate and this bill, is this renewable portfolio standard. And I could jump in to describe a little bit more about that.
Well, tell me, what is the renewable portfolio standard? Because I think it's a buzzword that people hear. It's not always clear. It's a very abstract concept, right? The renewable portfolio standard, because it seems quite divorced from climate change and doing anything good. It sounds it sounds very dry. So what is the renewable portfolio standard, and how does it work?
Yeah, so the Renewable Portfolio Standard, or the RPS, the policies around RPSs are responsible for 60% of the new renewable capacity across the country, and Massachusetts covers about 50% of New England's energy market. So basically, the RPS of Massachusetts shapes the region, and it's been described as the key tool in our belt when it comes to shaping the region's energy supply for the better. Mm-hmm. So the current status of this RPS is that it requires utilities to increase the renewable mandate by 1% each year currently. by 1%. So if it was 13% this year, it'll be 14% next year. Now,
let me just jump in and stop you. So you said, a renewable energy mandate. So it seems to me that means that the utilities, which we translate into the people who give you electricity, right? The people that this is NSTAR and Eversource, right? They are mandated by law to have a certain amount of renewable energy in their portfolio of places they get energy from, right? That's the idea.
Right. Exactly.
And that has to be 13%. Well, 13% is a good, I think, where we are now. And I guess the question is, how do these utilities, in very practical terms, how do they get renewable energy? What do they do? What the utilities do is to purchase what are called renewable energy credits, right? So every time a solar panel makes a megawatt of electricity, it makes the electricity, and at the same time, it makes this sort of intangible thing, which is a renewable energy credit that says this was green power. And those things have to be purchased separately, and so if the utilities buy these very abstract renewable energy credits that are tied to a particular solar panel, that means they can satisfy, they can say, I have 13% of my energy is renewable. And right. What happens is that the renewable portfolio standard, that 13%, increases by 1% per year under current law. So next year, they have to have 14% of their power. And what that could be clean, presumably come with these, by buying the renewable energy credits. And what that does is it makes a market for people who build and run solar panels to generate the renewable energy credits. So they make the electricity, they make the credits. It's called green power. Utility has to buy the credits, and that's what keeps pushing the entire supply to make it greener and greener. It's a very practical mechanism by which the state can force the utilities to increase the amount of renewable energy that is used by Massachusetts, right?
Right, right.
And so Absolutely. As it stands now, it's a 1% per year. The Clean Energy Future bill out of the Senate wanted it to go to 3% a year. And so tell me, what did the poor benighted people in the Massachusetts House of Representatives do with that RPS standard number? Which one did they pick?
Right. So they went with 2% starting in July of 2019, but then pulling it back to 1% starting into 2031. So just to look at this sort of what that would do. So the Senate's RPS of 3% per year would get us to 50% renewable by 2030, which sounds pretty great, and 100% renewable by 2049, which sounds awesome.
And again, that's every year is 3% more power, 3% more power, 3% more power, and then in aggregate, you say, as you say, by 2030, half of it's green. Right? And
exactly.
It's like a bank account, compound interest, all that kind of stuff comes into play. Okay, so that's the 3% number.
Right. And so currently, with just the 1%, we won't get to 100% renewable energy until 2105, which tell you is probably long after a lot of damages will already be done.
It's 87 years from now.
Exactly. So
somebody born, a child born today would be 87 years old.
87 years old. And the House bill actually won't get us to 100% until 2095. So, 77 years from now, and it'll get us to about 35% renewable by 2030. And when you compare, that number, even the House bill, 35% renewable by 2030, if you look at our competitors, Vermont's going to be at 75% by 2032, Hawaii 30% by 2020, California 50% by 2030, New York 50% by 2030. So you get the picture. We're starting to fall very far behind in the
And that competition, is not just for bragging rights, right? I mean, the competition is for creating an industry in your state and providing jobs and economic growth in your state by demanding this kind of power, right?
And leading the industry too, right? I mean, if we've got all the technology to make great renewable energy or have lots of infrastructure for it, then people are going to buy it from us, right?
That's right. If we know how to make the, if Massachusetts knows how to make the best wind turbine blades in the world, everyone's going to come buy those wind turbine blades, right? And
exactly.
That's where you want to be.
Right, right. In addition to the fact that it's, we don't really have a choice, right? We have to start moving towards mitigation, because adaptation.
Ain't going to cut it. So the state of play now is that the House, correct me if I'm wrong. Currently, this famous RPS number is at 1%, incrementing by 1% per year by law. The Senate bill wanted us to go from 1% to 3%, and which would give us a much more aggressive transition to green power. And by the time we get to the year 2030, we'd have 50% of our power from green sources. And the Massachusetts House has passed a bill that increments at 2%. So they split the difference, kind of, just to find a middle path, and then steps it down in the later half of the century, right?
Exactly, yeah, in 2031. Mm-hmm.
And so the comment is that the Massachusetts House of Representatives has faltered in their ambition, right? They looked into the future and they didn't do the right thing. They didn't go with a 3% increase rate, and they instead accepted something that was more to the liking of the utilities in the associated industries of Massachusetts, who are afraid of having any kind of change to the electricity grid, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's afraid of new technology, right? Mm-hmm. Essentially, I mean, you know, renewable energy is certainly the state of the future. And
So the state of play, I think, now is that from the Senate. So now let's talk about Boston Beacon Hill politics. There is one coherent bill that has come out of the Senate called the Clean Energy Future Bill, which we, I think you and I, Mariah, like very much. That's the Senate version of this bill. The House has produced a different version. And in fact, there were several competitive versions of topics that the House took to split the topic up into three or four bills. They tried to, they finally passed this one that had the 2%. And in fact, remind me, Mariah, we were talking before, there was an attempt to pass an amendment to the House bill that would have increased the renewable portfolio standard to 3%. And for whatever reason, I think because the leadership of the House got cold feet, that bill, that amendment to the House bill that would change the renewable portfolio standard to 3% didn't get voted on, right? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it got booted, even though there was, it had a co-sponsorship of 41 reps, which, you know, if your rep is on that list, call them and thank them for that co-sponsorship, because they certainly tried.
Yes.
But yeah, it got booted by Bob DeLeo and Jeff Sanchez.
Right. Now, just so that you know who the players are, Bob DeLeo is the Speaker of the Massachusetts House, a very powerful position. And he's from Winthrop, I think. And Jeff Sanchez is the head of the Ways and Means Committee. And if you follow politics at all, any place, any government that's got a Ways and Means Committee, basically that's like the Grateful Dead song, right? The Ways and Means. And where's the money coming from to do these things? And the Ways and Means Committee controls a lot of stuff. And Jeff Sanchez runs that committee, and he was basically opposed to the 3%, the 3% RPS. The House bill also did a few other minor things, not the least of which was to try to make some kind of study, I think is the right word, a study of how to make the power demanded, the power that responds to power your electricity on the hottest days when there's peak electricity demand, to try and make that somewhat cleaner. Now, the Senate bill did a much better job. The House bill basically said they were going to have a study committee go and look at ways to improve the cleanliness of the power on hot days. And that's important because that's when the demand for electricity is highest and the utilities turn on the dirtiest plants. So there are a couple of other features of the House bill. But I guess the point I'm getting to, Mariah, is that there are now, there's a bill in the House that's been passed the House. There's a bill that's passed the Senate. And the way the process works is for the House and Senate to form what's called a joint committee, where they send a few representatives from the House and a few representatives from the Senate, and they sit together, right, representatives and senators in the same committee, and they talk about the two different bills, and they do their best to come up with a bill that is common. This is classic stuff. I mean, you hear it all the time in Washington, but there's this joint committee trying to resolve the differences between the House bill and the Senate bill, and that is where activism comes back in. Right. So now we have the opportunity for the people in the Senate to go try and browbeat the people in the House to raise the renewable portfolio standard back up to 3% and convince them that that is the best way to go. And that is best supported by having people call their representatives in the House of Representatives and ask them to support the increase of the RPS standard, because what happens is you call your representative, he communicates up to the people on this committee saying, hey, I'm getting a lot of heat from back home, we need to have that RPS go to 3%, and the people on the joint committee then can, it makes it easier for them to come to consensus, right? Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah, and I mean, I think it's worth mentioning that when we talked to Pacheco last week, he said that if the House doesn't pass something by July 17th, everything dies. So the fact that they passed something and allowed it to come to this conference committee where the Senate and the House can get together and discuss is great. At least we have that, so they can try to reconcile these two bills. So I'm happy to see that, and that gives them at least, I think, until July 31st. I'm not sure if that's correct, but until July 31st to try and figure something else out. And yeah, absolutely calling and saying, you know, we want 3%, or even calling and saying, you know, we heard that the Senate bill will get us $263 million a year in economic growth and 2,000 new in-state jobs per year. And we like that, and we want to see that. So can you make that happen by putting more stuff from the Senate bill into the new, you know, the new bill?
And so, and what happens is that when this joint committee I'm talking about in the Senate, and when they come up with a single bill, this, you know, single language that they all agree on, then that bill has to go back to the Senate and back to the House for another vote. And that's when your representative needs to support the aggressive bill. And mm-hmm. just so that you know, because all this stuff is ongoing, this podcast will post early Thursday morning, early Thursday the 19th at noontime on Thursday the 19th of July in front of the Massachusetts State House on Beacon Street. There will be a demonstration of enthusiasm for the improved the improved renewable portfolio standard. If you can get to the State House at noontime tomorrow, we'll put up a link in the show. If you're listening to this show early morning Thursday the 19th, you can get yourself down into Boston and participate in this protest is the wrong word, demonstration outside the State House to try and convince the legislators that the renewable portfolio standard ought to be 3%. And I would say, in passing, other people that will be at this event at noontime on the 19th will be supporters of immigration reform, which unfortunately got pulled out of the budget. So the Safe Communities Act, which would have protected immigrants in Massachusetts from ICE if the police picked them up, blah blah blah. There's a whole thing. The Safe Communities Act got cut out by the House of Representatives, and so since climate and immigration are linked issues, there's going to be people from both sides of that topic in front of the State House tomorrow. If you can get there, it's a good thing to go do.
Yeah, and just as a follow-on to that, so for this emergency climate rally at the State House tomorrow, they said to bring 5 copies of a picture of who you are fighting for, a child, a grandchild, a friend, that your community, and explain why on the back. So I think they have some designs for what they're going to do with those 5 copies of picture.
That's great.
Yeah.
All right. Well, look, this is interesting stuff. I never thought of myself as, Well, I guess I do think of myself as a little bit political. I like this whole stuff about the process and the joint committee and back and forth and trying to get to agreement. But we can see that it's happening on this bill. We need to support it. It only happens when people get out there and talk about it. So, Mariah, we will put up links to most of what we discussed at the blog. Dear listener, the blog is at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find the show on our Facebook page. It's /massclimateaction. Share us around. You can listen to the show directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, et cetera, et cetera. All those fancy modern podcast distribution tools, as we say. And, of course, you can find us on Apple Podcast. So we will close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the Trump administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So, Mariah, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.